This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Nat, did you know that the FDA doesn't require tampon companies to disclose a list of the ingredients in their tampons?
That's pretty horrifying.
Yeah, so major brands use synthetic ingredients and harsh chemical cleansing agents, whereas Lola is 100% cotton and BPA-free.
And for those of you who are a little more environmentally conscious and don't even want to use the applicator, they make applicator lists, they make various sizes, and panty liners for those who want them. And yeah, you can customize your subscription so you can get exactly what you need, you know, in the right sizes.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And it gets delivered directly to your door, so you don't have to worry about
like... Lazy girl's dream.
Exactly. You don't have to worry about running off to the store because they will be there every month at your door. Also, $5 off your first box.
Come on, guys. Can't beat that.
Pretty exciting. Head on over to trymylola.com/babes. That's B-A-B-E-S. And start your subscription today.
Go, guys. Do it.
From Cabernet to Monet, they're here to slay the art history, babe.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Corey.
I'm Natalie.
I'm Ginny, and we are the Art History Babes.
And we were going to be recording on some new equipment, but we're really inept when it comes to technology, so that's not happening today.
Eventually.
It's going to happen, though.
Stay tuned.
Be on the lookout. personally, I think our audio quality is getting a lot better. I think over time.
Yeah,
where we're at now, we've improved quite
true.
A bit.
Sure. And a lot of podcasts, I mean, obviously ones that are like very well established and have touring dates and all that, but they have sound editors.
Exactly.
That are separate from people on the podcast. Our sound editor is Corey.
Yes.
That's me. I do that. And I... did not have experience doing that.
She also doesn't get paid for it. So.
Exactly. That's actually, before we jump into what we're talking about today, at the end of a piece of work, she gives a shout out.
Oh,
she goes,
so many people.
I know. She goes, it takes a lot of people to make a podcast. And granted, it does, but... there's only four of us and we do it all. So I was actually really, after she listed all those names that go into the production of that podcast, I was like really proud of us.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
Wow.
Me too. I was struck by that as well. It was like 15 names.
Yeah.
Maybe 10, but a lot.
Who are like professionals.
Yeah.
And, and like get paid and shit. So, but
living the dream.
I know, right? but yeah, so today we're going to talk about the podcast series, A Piece of Work with Abby Jacobson.
I was so excited about this.
Yeah.
And it didn't disappoint.
No.
It was so great. I don't know, before we dive in, does anyone have any fun anecdotes? You went to Hawaii, Nat.
Yeah, I did. It was a very quick trip. As my boyfriend pointed out, I was in Hawaii for less days than I was just in San Francisco. So it was very fast, but it was good.
Saw some pictures of you on beaches and such.
Beaches, snorkeling, you know, all the Hawaiian stuff.
Did you see any sharks?
No, but I saw a manta ray.
Oh, that's
cool.
Yeah, it was super cool.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it swam under me. It was kind of scary.
Whoa.
Just kept thinking of Steve Irwin. Not
sure.
Gonna lie. Like, you can't not think about that when that thing's
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What a way to go.
That's a bummer.
I guess you know, when you're Seaver, when
right.
death by an animal.
Yeah.
Family is living
the thing
legacy.
Is, stingrays, like, fatalities due to stingrays are super rare.
Right.
Yeah,
like,
and it got
because
him.
It
right
stuck
in
him in,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right in the heart.
Yeah.
Right in the heart.
I know,
because
when I was in San Diego the other day, my friend who surfs was like, you go in the water, like, shuffle your feet to kick up the sand, because that scares the stingrays away, but, like, you know, if they sting you, it's not that bad. It's painful, but you're mostly going to be okay.
Yeah, it's kind of on, it's on the same level as, like, jellyfish and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Unless it gets you in the heart. That's a dope photo. Look at it.
Well,
majestic
yeah.
creature.
Ooh.
I'm not going to take credit. The instructor, the tour guide, offered to take my video camera down.
Oh.
And she, like, dove. I couldn't
Whoa.
Dive that deep.
That's great.
But
you could have taken credit for that, and I would have believed it.
I wish. I'm not that badass. I'm sorry, you guys can probably hear this a little.
The sound of
that.
The ocean.
The
sound the ocean floor.
The race swimming. Saw some turtles.
Oh,
I'll see
great.
Turtles.
Yeah.
Every time I've been
guys.
Snorkeling, I never really see anything that great. I'm
Me
also
either.
Fairly convinced that I died via drowning in an ocean in at least one past life. So I sometimes get a little nervous,
mm-hmm.
like going down under the ocean.
And the pressure.
Yeah, and trusting the breathing apparatus. It never seems to work properly when I do it. My goggles always fog up really
yeah.
a lot. I mean, it's still cool. But I would,
that sounds
yeah.
super stressful.
No, I will
yeah.
say that is how most of my snorkeling experiences have gone. This was the first time where I actually felt kind of like in control and
yeah.
I don't know, I gained some confidence this time. I tried
right.
diving. I had never tried the just
oh,
diving
yeah,
down
yeah.
before.
Yeah.
I didn't have any sort of floaty thing. I just
mm-hmm.
had my little fins.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know. There's something about this time that I was a little more confident. Because there
sure.
were definitely times where I like was in the water and would just, like, whip my head around violently. Like, there's a shark behind me. I know him. I know he's there. I feel him. Yeah.
So, crazy shark story. Because it was, is it Shark Week or it was Shark Week?
It was.
Recently.
Yeah, a few weeks ago.
So.
I haven't had cable in, like, a decade.
Yeah, me
so
either.
I don't know.
But
I remember
either, but
someone was talking about, like,
yeah.
oh, Shark Week. Like, it's always the same, essentially.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I really love it. I don't know. Someone was saying that recently. But anyways, a friend of mine's friend, who I have met several times in Oregon, got bitten by a shark.
Shit.
Yeah. Great white. He was surfing Indian Beach, for anyone who knows the beaches of Oregon. And he was like, his legs and most of his torso were floating in the water, and he had his arms on his board like he was getting ready to, I guess, get back on or like paddle or whatever. And just all of a sudden felt something on his thigh and got pulled down, punched the shark in the gills.
Oh, my God.
Gets back on his surfboard and just, I guess, adrenaline was just like, shark, and everyone's getting out of the water. And he's a trauma nurse. And so he instructed people on the beach how to tie a tourniquet around his thigh because his muscles were just like shredded in his thigh.
That is the craziest
story.
His
name is Joe. You can look it up. Oregon
he's
shark
a
attack.
Real life.
He's a real
superhero.
Yeah, he's a real person.
Wow.
Yeah. And yeah,
that's
I just heard
crazy.
That story. And he's like, that is nuts. And not that I didn't believe my friend that told me, but then I looked it up on the news and like it was all over the place. And yeah, it was nuts. So
that's
be careful
crazy.
Out there. But also, it's very rare.
Yeah.
But still be
But also, let's stop demonizing sharks because,
oh, yeah.
like,
oh, no.
they're, yeah, it's a rare thing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It is.
That's kind of the fault of Shark Week. It's like, Shark Week's
yeah.
made a lot of people think that, like, sharks are a lot scarier than they actually
yeah.
are.
Yeah.
And
or
it's
that
like,
it's
that's
just, like, more of, it should be more of a fear. Like, that's what people get
yeah.
in life.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
It's not even, like, when I'm in the ocean, I'm not even necessarily thinking about sharks. I just am thinking about things swimming beneath me that I can't see, and that,
yeah.
that unnerves me.
Yeah, I
definitely.
Will say the moments when I did get a little freaked out was, like, when we, you guys know Molokini? It's, like, that crater-shaped mass of land, and you can't
oh.
go on it, like, you can't walk on it, but
oh.
the, it, like, connects down to the coral, so
oh,
there's just,
sure.
like, so
yeah.
many fish and shit
yeah,
living
yeah.
out there. And it's actually really sad. I kind of wanted to look up pictures of what it looked like before, because you can just tell, like, most of that coral is just so dead.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's all fucked up,
mm.
and people suck, and whatever. But when you were in there, you're, like, kind of looking down at the coral and all the stuff, and then if you turn around, it's just, like, endless water. And, you know, the way the, like, light shines through, and so it creates
mm-hmm.
these, like, effects, but
mm-hmm.
you just can't see anything. It just, like, blurs out.
Wow.
And I was kind of like,
Yeah.
Like, it just, it makes you feel that, like, sense of being so small.
Yeah.
And, like, if a shark did want to just come trucking out of the water there, I mean, there's nothing I can do. I'm bait.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, that's it. That's just my bait.
That's how it goes, I guess.
So, anyway.
A piece of work.
Piece of work. Nothing to do with.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with sharks, but that's okay. So if you haven't listened to A Piece of Work with Abby Jacobson, you should definitely get on that immediately. It's been at the top of the arts charts since it first came out.
Yeah.
It's a 10-episode podcast series with Abby Jacobson of Broad City, which, if you're not familiar, you need to get on that immediately well.
I love that show so much, it's probably annoying. But
no.
It's just, it's a genius show.
It's very quotable.
We were quoting it in...
So much in Europe.
In Europe. What was the...
One Fook.
Oh, no, it was the...
I can't pay.
Oh, yeah. I'm a baby. Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, we probably sound real dumb.
Yeah.
But if you have, you're probably laughing too.
But it's a great show. It's on Hulu, so you have no excuse. You need to watch it.
Yeah.
But so what we're going to do, because we were obviously as Broad City fans and, you know, art fans, we were pretty stoked when we heard about this podcast. So what we decided to do is a kind of a response episode. We're going to tell you our thoughts, what our favorite parts were, kind of just respond to some of the ideas that were brought up. Obviously, like, it's a 10-episode series, so if we talked about everything, we would be talking for, like, 5 hours. And also, what's the point? Like, go listen to it yourself.
Yeah, we think you guys should listen to it, so we have no interest in summarizing the whole thing for you.
Yeah, exactly. So
do yourself a favor.
In general, what did you guys think about the way the show was set up, the purpose of the show?
Yeah. Like, we should probably mention, too, that it was in collaboration with the MoMA in New York.
Everything she talks about
is related to what the MoMA owns. So everything she talks about is, I think, owned by the MoMA for the most part.
Yeah,
there may be a few outliers there, but for the most part, she's dealing with their collection. And, yeah, having special access to things that the regular museum goer wouldn't necessarily have. Like,
yeah, and since we're dealing with the MoMA, obviously we're talking strictly modern contemporary.
Yes.
Nothing
yes.
older than that.
Right.
So 20th century forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I thought it was great, especially when you talk about modern art. And I've had a lot of people tell this to me when I've said, oh, I've been in art history and blah, blah, blah. And a lot of people have the feeling of looking at art and being like, I don't get it, and then feeling stupid.
Yeah.
Or like they're not enlightened enough to understand it. And I think that's especially an issue with a lot of more modern and contemporary art, whereas you look at a landscape and you're like, I understand this. You understand. There's the milkmaid and the sheep and the rolling hills of...
Mm-hmm. What painting are you describing?
I don't
right
know.
Now?
Perhaps a German 17th century peasant landscape.
Yeah, I'm saying it.
Milkmaid.
She said milkmaid, though. I went kind of Vermeer in my mind.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, that is fair.
Northern European Renaissance landscape. I don't know. So I think that Abby Jacobs, I'm just going to call her Abby because she's my friend.
Yeah.
Just kidding, she's not. We don't know her yet, but we're working on
it. I don't
it.
Think she would mind. I think she would.
Abs. I'm going to call her Abs.
Right? RuPaul called her that, and I was like, you lucky bitch. But the main takeaway that I had from her podcast was basically trying to explain the different kinds of modern contemporary art, from things like minimalism to like abstract expressionist art, in ways that people can understand it and being like, no, it's not meant to make you feel dumb. It's not meant to create some kind of inside joke that only a very small elite part of the population can understand. And also touching base on the whole thing of like, my kid could do that, or like, I could do that, and really delving more into the concept of like, so much of art can be in the idea behind it, and not so much only the product. So I thought that was really cool, and I really think she accomplished it.
Definitely.
In a human, approachable, funny way.
Definitely, and we'll go more into detail, but just the people she had on the show. She had amazing guests that we also, like, Hannibal Buress.
Questlove.
Questlove is probably my favorite human.
That was my favorite episode.
Like, RuPaul.
Yeah.
Tavi Gevinson.
Yeah. Yeah. Impressive young woman.
Yeah. She's amazing. Oh, my God, you guys. Her podcast is pretty good, too. It's geared more towards, like, I don't know, young adults, like, kind of teenage girls through young adult, but I still, I enjoy her so much that I still love it.
She's very well spoken. I was like, this girl's 21? Like, what?
Yeah, right?
But yeah, just amazing guests, and Abbi Jacobson would go, would take these guests that maybe weren't necessarily a part of the art world or super, you know, entrenched in the history of modern art, and would, like, look at art with them, and they'd have this very human dialogue, this very real experience of what it is to just go experience an artwork. And I loved that entire approach, because even for us who have master's degrees in art history, we do have a vast amount of knowledge to pull from. Yep. Like, that doesn't mean we know everything about every artwork we look at.
Oh, yeah.
And we are just as likely to step in front of an artwork and be like, what's happening here? And, like, having to make sense of the experience with no background knowledge. Like, and I think that's such an important aspect of experiencing artwork. And the podcast just captures it in a very fun and engaging way.
Yeah. Totally.
And in addition to, you know, people like art historians and curators having their own separate, like, emotional or kind of intuitive experience with artwork rather than just a historical one, like, she does a good job of bringing in curators who do kind of, you know, curators or art educators or other people of that nature, academics, and they'll explain, you know, historically, or sometimes they'll just explain their impression. Like, you kind of get all of these levels of interpretation, and she never ever poses one above another. She really works hard, I feel like, at kind of diminishing any sort of hierarchy of knowledge about art, of experience about art, of different art forms. Like, she tries to make everything really egalitarian, and I think she does a good job.
Yeah, definitely. And it's fun, and it's funny.
Yeah.
And which is what an experience to the MoMA should be like. Like, we pay money to go to these museums. Like, you should enjoy yourself, you
know? For sure.
Like, it shouldn't just be this test of how cultured you are, you know?
Yeah. And, like, I think the point was made in one of the episodes, too, where, and I kind of bounce between going either way, where, like, you want, because whenever I go to a museum, like, sometimes I go with people who love art and other times I don't. And I always just kind of, like, pay attention to how people process that, because some people just go up and look at the image and they don't even really look at the wall text. Other people just, like, read the wall text. And some people go into museums and feel like, okay, I need to get every bang for my buck and look at every single fucking piece of art that is in this museum. And they made a really interesting point about that. I think it was in, yeah, it was in the third episode. And they were talking about monochromes. Mm-hmm. And so they, you know, obviously talk about Eve Klein. And, you know, she made that point where, you know, you can go into a museum and you can just look at, like, one piece and look at it for an hour instead of feeling like you have to cruise through and, like, absorb everything. And I think that's such a great idea, because especially me, I love museums. Like, I go to them all the time. I've always loved them. But I get museum fatigue. I get, like, overloaded. And the idea of going in somewhere and just going up to something because it has some kind of connection to you, you look at it, it makes you feel something, it makes you think something, and just taking the time to observe it and, like, not necessarily worry about, like, what am I supposed to be feeling? What am I supposed to be thinking? And just feeling whatever you feel and looking at that. I was really struck by that because I've often felt that way as well, and I don't practice it as much as I should, perhaps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if you give yourself the chance to go in a museum, preferably when it's not on a super crowded day, obviously, and you can just kind of, like, zone out and look at a piece, it's pretty cool. It's a good thing to do, I think.
Definitely. And kind of going off of that, I don't know if this was the one you were talking about, because Questlove was on two episodes. Mm-hmm. He was on episode 3 and then the last episode, which were both two of my faves as well.
Yeah.
But on that same topic, they were discussing taking time and just looking at one piece. And like, Questlove has a print of an Eve Klein that he likes to spend time with, which makes me very happy.
Yeah.
And I also wrote here on my notes, I wrote, of course, Questlove has synesthesia.
Yeah, right.
So, like, Questlove talks about how he has synesthesia, and he, like, you know, basically crosses music and which I think might be one of the more common forms of synesthesia is music and visuals, and so he sees like colors and things with music, and I was just like, of course he fucking does, because it's like the most interesting you know, mental quirk, and he's like the coolest person. Kind of going off what Ginny said though, he makes a quote at like he's talking to Abby about this idea of taking time with art, and he says, we need to learn to get bored again.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like,
he said,
fuck,
Chris Rock said that. I was like, Chris Rock,
smart man. So it's a quote by Chris Rock, we need to learn to get bored again. And
so true.
It is so true. And Questlove kind of goes on a little, like, tangent talking about how, you know, he's just... he's obviously a busy guy. And he's always, you know, when he's not doing something or engaged with something, he feels like that's a problem. But at the same time, like getting bored is kind of where the magic happens.
Yeah.
And I actually, after that, ruminated on that idea for a while, and I've been thinking about it a lot and trying to remember, like, I had this moment where I was like, I honestly, truly don't remember the feeling of being bored. Like, 'cause I always feel like there's always something I should be doing or need to be doing. And the feeling of being bored that I recall from childhood is you don't have those responsibilities. There's very much this, I want to be doing something.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the last time I had that.
Yeah.
And so I, like, I don't know, I've been thinking about that a lot, of trying to connect back with my inner child that used to always be whining about being bored and, like, wanting to go do things and explore things, and trying to shift, I guess, the mental perception of, like, because I feel like now when I get curious or creative, there's a sense of I need to, I have to, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas when
exactly.
I was a child, it was like, it was more, it was
like out of necessity. Like,
it was fun because it was the best option, because I didn't want to be bored, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a different, impulse there, and a different feeling that comes from it. So, like, I'm trying to get back in touch with that idea of just, like, letting myself go down whatever, like, creative path or adventurous path I want to go down, not because I feel like I have to, because I need to be doing this, but because that's just, like, because I'm bored.
Totally.
Because, you know what I mean?
Totally.
Does that make sense? Am I just rambling?
No, absolutely. Because I think, like, when we're bored, that's when ideas come around a lot of times, and that spurs on more creativity and imagination, especially talking about being a kid, like being an only child. That would, like,
I was bored all the time.
And you have to rely on your imagination and being creative about things. And there's so much to that in terms of just, I don't know, creativity and imagination are often things that we kind of lose in certain aspects of later adult life, and I just feel like we need them.
Yeah, definitely. And and doing it in a way that removes that pressure, that
exactly.
like pressure of I need to do this because it's expected of me, or I need to do this because society wants me to be creative. It's like, no, you just, as a child, you just did it because it made you feel alive.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So so I agree, that was one of my favorite episodes.
Great.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
Yes.
And I was just like, the way they were talking about that color blue, I was just, I wanted at first to go, like, pull up a picture, and then I was kind of enjoying envisioning myself, like, the color that they were describing.
Yeah,
does that
definitely.
Make sense? Like,
because,
I mean, we deal with this all the time. A podcast about art can be a little complicated because you're talking about something so visual, but the fact that it forces you to describe things in such a visceral way sometimes is, like, a very welcome challenge. So it's kind of nice to hear someone else doing that, like, describing something that you almost can't describe.
Yeah.
Like, color is almost beyond description. Yeah, I don't know.
She did, and she did such a great job at that throughout. I mean, because that episode where she was mostly talking about artists who worked with light, like Terrell, she, at the beginning of that episode, is describing it. And it's just done so well.
Yeah.
It's done so well in a way that's just, like, really visual. and so easy to follow.
It's very visual. So that's the next episode, episode 4, which was also probably one of my favorites.
Yeah, I was thinking of you.
She opens it describing a Tyrell, basically.
Yeah.
And I was walking around when I was listening to this episode, I was walking around just in my neighborhood at night. It was like 10 o'clock at night. And I was walking around listening, and I was definitely like a couple glasses of wine deep at the time. And this episode opened, and she describes this Tyrell in a very, like, clear visual way, but there was, like, just enough emotion that, like, it brought me to tears. And I, like, started crying, and I was like, I know this is partially the wine, but also I adore Tyrell, so much. So I can relate to that experience in very real way, because I love his work. In terms of the work that Abby Jacobson did in this podcast, I just thought that was a brilliant moment from her.
Yeah.
It was just a very cool experience to hear verbalized.
Sure.
Definitely. And then also moving throughout the rest of the episode, Abby goes into a Tyrell with Samantha Irby.
Yeah.
And they have a very fun time.
Yeah, that was great. I want to go there so bad.
I know.
Oh my god.
I'm actually really mad. Okay, so I have been in Tyrells like that.
Yes.
There was the one at LACMA, but I was at MoMA PS1 in July. I was there for a whole day, like for warm up, like getting drunk, and there were DJs and stuff, and like we went and looked at some of the art, but I didn't realize that there was this like really important Tyrell there, and it might be one of my greatest regrets. So I have to go back to MoMA PS1 because I don't know how I missed that. I feel really dumb.
The De Young has a Tyrell out in the sculpture garden.
That Tyrell I've spent a lot of time in.
Yeah,
that one, because it's that one's a little different. It's a skyscape. It doesn't have the light, but he uses natural light.
Yeah,
and it's
the space itself is crazy cool.
Yeah, it's a very beautiful experience. I've been to that one quite a few times. I think that might be the first Tyrell I ever went to, actually.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, they just had a blast, in the Tyrell, which is just a fun experience to listen to. Mm-hmm. And then later in that episode, Abby meets up with
Flavian Judd.
Yeah, with Donald Judd's son.
Oh, just Flavin.
Flavin,
yeah. It's Donald Judd's son, Flavin Judd, who is named after the infamous light artist Dan Flavin and his dad, the infamous minimalist artist Donald Judd. And I was like, that is the most crazy way to come into the world.
Right.
Is to be named after the two most just like high art kind of like, I mean, a lot of people considered their work to be somewhat inaccessible and you're named after both of them?
Yeah.
It's like, man, what?
I know. That was a trip.
Yeah.
Flavin was a very nice dude, though. And he was in a little bit of
a little smug. Is that weird?
No, I don't think it's weird at all, and I also don't blame him, because his name is Flavin Judd.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, I wouldn't go as far as to say that I thought he was, like, rude or, like, I don't even know that I'd say pretentious.
He just was
but
just
definitely
like, it was just
smug.
Normal, you
like,
know? Like, it's just my childhood. It's like, okay, yes, it was just your childhood, but you should also recognize that your childhood was a little different from many people listening to you.
Yeah, you need to recognize you've had a very interesting existence.
Yeah, he acted like it was a weird question to be like.
Yeah. And he was talking, I think it was in the next episode, on minimalism and how the term, like his dad considered it to be so problematic. And that it was created by art critics. And I was kind of like, I had mixed feelings about that.
Same.
Because most of the terms for different art movements came out of criticism by art critics.
Yeah.
And I think there's something to, like, embracing the term and being like, yeah, you know what? Sure.
Yeah.
And but then on the flip side, I got his point of being like, if you call something minimalist, then you aren't able to see all of its possibilities.
Yeah.
But it raised an interesting kind of debate in my own head.
I thought so too, because what came to mind was the whole pointillism thing and how I had I learned in a class that pointillism was not a term created by anyone who was using the technique, but they called it divisionism because it was a division of lines, whatever. So in that case, I was like, okay, I think that's fair to be like, it's not this, it's this.
Yeah.
But I was like, well, they're saying it's not minimalism, but then they're not trying to give us another description. So it's like, to me, it just felt a little like, I don't know, just trying to be difficult almost. But I agree. I think it's important to mention, I think he says in more or less words that to call it minimalism is to reduce what it is. You're calling it a reduction rather than, you know, understanding all of the nuances and depth of it.
Right.
But, like, then do better and describe it better. I don't know.
I mean, I totally see what you're saying. I think this is also just the age-old debate between the artiste and, like, the art historian is, like, what an art critic or an art historian does is they try and define visual art. That's what they do, so it can be explained in some way. And then the art itself, obviously, is never going to perfectly fit in any definition given to it. The same way a human being will never fit into any definition that you give about them, but that's just what the human mind does, is we try to create distinctions because that's how our brains work. They work in terms of definition and pattern.
Yeah.
And so it's basically like, yeah, you're right. You're right. Minimalism doesn't say what the art is, but, like, it has to go in a group, you know?
Yeah,
it just has to go in a group. That's a group it's gone in.
Yeah.
So that's the way it is,
and
you know?
And that shit goes back, like, centuries.
Exactly. That's all art movements.
Yeah.
We talked about it in the Impressionism episode.
Yeah.
Impressionists didn't like the term Impressionism.
Yeah, it was
an insult. Fauvism. It started as an insult as well.
Yeah.
Like, this
Baroque.
Yeah.
Like, misshapen pearl.
Mannerism. Like, all of that shit. It all came from people who didn't like it. And that, you know, it's just the way it is. Not saying it's, like, wrong or right. Not saying it could be. But it's just such a circular debate. Not to say that it's not worth debating about it. Yeah, I just was like, huh. That's,
but it's just like, at the end of the day, it's going to have the same outcome. Like, we understand that a term can't embody everything about a specific work of art. We all know that. If you don't know, like, we get it. Like, that should just be baseline understanding,
right,
I feel like.
Right.
But these terms have been created to try and make sense of the work in a certain way.
Yeah.
And you can disagree with it, but that doesn't mean the term doesn't have merit.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
That was an interesting episode. Also, like, minimalism. Well, I guess that was...
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
There was the light art episode and the minimalism episode. So the minimalism episode, I think minimalism is a very contentious art form for a lot of people. Like, a lot of people just don't, they just won't even take the time for it. Like,
angry.
Yeah, they do.
Like, pissed.
And they talk about that in the podcast too. Like, you have people's reactions and it's like, whoa.
Oh my God.
I think she summed it up nicely when she explained that people sometimes see it as anti-art. So people see it as, like, inherently aggressive sometimes, and I think that's maybe why they get so aggressive back.
Yeah.
Not that I think that that's an appropriate reaction necessarily. That's not my reaction. But,
no need to fight the art. It's not necessary.
Yeah. But I guess that makes sense to me why I guess some people get so mad. Is they think that it's, like, attacking art in a way or insulting art.
Mm-hmm.
Also in that episode, she talks to Joe Baer, which was, like, a really good conversation.
Yeah.
So Joe Baer is a famous quote-unquote minimalist artist, and she tells a story about how when she was making work, a lot of times the reason she did so well is because she had a unisex name, you know? So there wasn't, people didn't know she was female, and then there were two instances in her life where people actually, once they realized she was a woman,
returned the
artwork they had purchased back to her.
Nuts.
I know, right?
Like, that is like a level of misogyny that I had not yet encountered. Not a level that I had encountered, but an exact situation that I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, how do you rationalize that in your head? Explain that one to me.
I know, right? Oh, my goodness.
I can't even...
Like, oh, a female person did this?
Yeah.
Oh, you have a vagina?
I don't want this.
No,
anymore.
Thank you.
Yeah.
No. You must know nothing about shapes.
This is now shitty art, and I no longer find it aesthetically pleasing, even though I did like it enough to purchase it in the first place.
But her attitude about it was so cool, and I like that she mentioned at a certain point that her work is essentially non-gendered, that there's nothing masculine or feminine about it in any way.
Yeah.
And I liked that.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of, like, pushing that aside, because that does come up a lot in art, like, masculine, feminine, themes, subjects, styles, what have you, colors.
Yeah.
So the fact that she was just like, nah, not even going to deal with it, there's no gender.
It's just artwork. Yeah, exactly.
And what'd she say? And she said, it's genuine and it's good and that's why it's lasted. And
fuck,
I was like, you are.
Get it?
You are.
Fuck yeah,
it.
Joe.
You are all of it.
What a boss. Yeah, she talks to some great artists on this podcast.
Yeah, she does. So many of them.
And they're so excited to talk to her, which is so cool.
Yeah.
She talks to our girl Yoko.
Yes.
That, like, that was good.
Yeah.
Episode 6, yeah.
Oh, yeah, her, Carolee Schneemann, and then she talks about Yoko in that piece. Yeah, that was the performance art episode, which was great because even as an art historian, sometimes performance art, I'm like, I don't know about it. Like, some of it, I'm like, yes. And then other ones, it's been the harder medium for me to get into, and I feel like Abby approaches that kind of general consensus that a lot of people don't get it, or they don't like it, or they're like, how is this art? She really approaches it in like a pretty thorough and informative way of talking about the different kinds of performance art and how those, a lot of like artists like Carolee Schneemann and Yoko Ono, like push the envelope in that way. And it was cool that she had RuPaul on that episode.
Yeah. He was perfect for the performance
episode
for sure.
Yeah.
That was a fun one. And like listening to them like watching
Joy
together.
So well. I like that they actually recorded them watching it. Like
that was a good call.
Perfect way to do that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think both like the interview with Carolee Schneemann and then the discussion they had about, they had a discussion about Yoko Ono's cut piece, which
they watched that one while they recorded it too.
Yeah. And we talked about that one on the podcast previously, and I really enjoyed listening to the reactions of it, how shocked and like appalled they were when the dude like cuts her bra strap and stuff. Like they were like pissed about it. I was like, they like experience those feelings of being being violated that I think are so central to that word.
Totally.
Yeah. I have written in my notes, quote, it was a dick move, end quote.
It was a dick move.
It was a dick move. They said it perfectly.
It was definitely a dick move.
And that honestly, like, I mean, I've talked about cut piece in classes. I've talked about it with you guys. I've like talked about it at like in parties. Like it's come up a few times in my life, and like it was so different hearing someone else like watch it and react to it that way. Like, I don't know how else to describe it, but for some reason it made me think even more about how much about the human condition that work says. And
it's a very important
when they were just like, you know that that guy's there and that guy's always going to be there, and she was counting on it, and it doesn't, I don't know, so cool.
Yeah.
Listen to that episode, guys. It was good.
And so much performance art since then has been based off of cut piece. It's one of the most important performance works of all time.
And most importantly, they mention how it's ridiculous that Yoko is considered to have broken up the Beatles, and how this performance, which was, as Corey said, like a huge turning point in art and like, or just like a monumental point in art and performance art. And it happened before she ever married John Lennon.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
You know, come on, guys.
Respect.
Think about it.
Yeah. Educate yourself.
The next episode was the episode on film. Mm-hmm. We got Hannibal Buress again. That was the second episode he was on. So there's two episodes with Hannibal Buress who we all also love. He was on the first episode where they talked about
Marcel Duchamp
and ready mates and humor and art, like Dadaism, and I think they picked up on a lot of the things like we've been saying about Dadaism, like this, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure Hannibal Buress said they were, like, trolling the art world.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, because we talk a lot about how, like, memes are the new Dada.
Yes.
And there's this very interesting, like, interaction of, like, trolling. And but I also really loved how willing Hannibal Buress was to just, like, appreciate Marcel Duchamp's work. He was like, okay, he's, like, versatile, and he was, like, because people shut down at Duchamp a lot of the time, and like, the concept of ready-mades, people shut down, and, like, Hannibal was, like, okay, like, he was, like, not about to hate on it. He was, like, ready for it, and I thought that was
his
really good.
Whole fucking journey through understanding Bicycle Wheel, or just understanding Marcel Duchamp as an artist was awesome, because he really did start with, like, why can't I spin it? Like, he wanted to spin it. And then at one point he said that looks like some high shit. And, you know, he might not have been wrong. Yeah, you put a fucking bicycle wheel on a stool and spin it while you think. Like, yeah, that does sound...
That sounds like a legitimate response.
Yeah. But you're right. He totally was open, like a fucking vessel to everything that Abby had to say. And just kind of... I don't know. I feel like for people who don't know much about Duchamp, it's like you get to kind of learn along Hannibal.
Yeah.
And
for sure.
I don't know. Yeah. And that's a perfect place to start. I was actually super excited, just as like a nerdy art historian, that she started with Duchamp, because most people consider like modern art to kind of start with him, because he was really like the first, quote unquote, he's largely considered the first, like, conceptual artist, and, like, that he just turned the art world on his head throughout his career. So, I mean, there really was no better place to start.
True.
In my opinion.
Wise choice.
And, it was, I totally agree. He shifted the art world in, like, such a real way, but at the same time, for people who aren't familiar with art and art history, you know, it's crazy with Duchamp, because he's not a household name.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask someone with very little knowledge of art history, they don't know who Duchamp is. And
it's
like,
hard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because it takes,
exactly.
It takes some thought. You can't really buy a Duchamp like print and put it on your wall. Like, that's not really a thing that people do.
It's not like Andy Warhol.
Yeah.
Who also they do in an episode.
Do we want to talk about the Warhol episode?
Yeah.
Sure.
That was an interesting one.
It was an interesting one because, all right, so obviously, like, totally fucking love it. Abby Jacobson and Tavi Gevinson, like, great. I did enjoy listening to them talk about Warhol. However, I'm going to have to kind of be on this, like, Tavi Gevinson mentioned how, like, she really, like, appreciated Warhol and stuff, and then she feels like she talks to older people, and they're just like, no, and, like, there's something that, like, she might be missing there, and I'm gonna have to be the old lady here, I guess, to an extent, I get it. I mean, I used to be a lot more into Warhol. I had a Warhol planner one year that was actually really cool. It had, like, all these prints, and it had all these, you know, mysterious, like, cynical-ass quotes from Andy Warhol in it. But it was, like, dope. I loved it. Like, I was definitely a lot more into him, you know, maybe when I was, like, 20, 21 type of thing. I don't know. We've kind of touched on it a little bit in this podcast. Like, he was kind of problematic. He was kind of a hack. He was kind of, granted, I'm not saying he didn't do anything of merit. He did.
Right,
he did important things.
Right.
And there are certain works of his that I do appreciate, just
for
aesthetically.
Sure.
I appreciate a lot. And I think there was a lot to bringing attention to consumer culture and things like that. And they bring up how he the way they, okay, so like the way they talk about him is that he just wanted recognition for his work. Mm-hmm. And I kind of was like, but no, though. Like, yeah, you're right. Like, we do all just want recognition for our work.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with being an artist and wanting recognition for your art. And there's nothing wrong, like, if you make something and you want, like, wanting recognition for it is totally legit. And I agree with that statement. But I feel like with Andy Warhol, it was way more complicated and a little bit more slimy than that.
Yes.
It wasn't, and yeah, and I agree with the idea that some, like, because some people will come at the subject of Andy Warhol as being, like, you know, because he wasn't, like, the struggling artist
right.
that was just doing it for the sake of the work, he's not an artist. Like, that's bullshit, too.
Yeah.
I agree. But it was different than just wanting recognition for his work.
And I think they made the point, too, that he was one of the first major artists you can think of that was, like, so famous.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted that fame. He entirely did.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's a question of whether or not those Campbell soup cans were really worth that much fame.
Right.
And that much money. Like, were they worth that?
Right.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That was interesting because I think people have a lot of different opinions on Andy Warhol. And I don't know if it's depends on generation or what, but I have mixed feelings.
I think.
I have mixed feelings about him. And we touched on it a little bit in our
Basquiat episode.
Yeah.
I think he's a very complicated and fascinating character.
Certainly.
I will give you that 100%. And I
had the life to prove it.
Yeah,
my
and I'm
God.
I'm looking forward to doing a future episode on him.
Oh,
I
for
think
sure.
he's incredibly fascinating, but the quickness to just be like, Andy Warhol's great, I think is also.
Yeah. Well, and I will say I definitely like what stood out to me in that episode was how Abby Jacobson herself was relating to Warhol. So
yeah,
that
yeah,
also,
I remember that. Yeah,
I think that maybe put a different spin on it that she wasn't necessarily like maybe meaning to like place him on a pedestal so much as you know she points out that he was an illustrator first and then
right.
he had a TV show and she's like, hey, like
yeah.
that's kind of weird. Like, you know, I think she's just. She has that perspective, which kind of shifts her mindset
for
and
sure.
maybe, you know, having the illustration thing in common, like, you know, yeah, because...
Which was, in terms of the podcast, I agree. It was an
yeah.
interesting... It was an interesting moment in the podcast because I think... I mean, it's partially kind of what we try to do here is, like... Understanding art does come from personal experience,
mm-hmm,
and
yes.
if you think you can be entirely, like, I don't know, trying to be entirely objective about art and artists is stupid.
Yeah.
Like, like, it's dumb. Like,
yeah,
you should try to connect with them and try and express those ideas.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree. I really appreciated seeing her make those connections
mm-hmm.
in her head of,
right.
like, how she relates to Andy Warhol.
And in general, it's not a super critical podcast, and it's
yeah, yeah.
because it is so
right.
like limited. You know, 10 episodes. There,
and
the longest
episodes,
one, yeah,
yeah,
is like 24 minutes,
yeah.
and they go all the way down to like 14. Like,
yeah,
they're not. It's not a ton of content. So she's obviously being choosy and choosing to talk about things in a positive light.
Definitely.
So yeah, I agree with you guys 100% that there were critiques that could be made about Warhol that weren't. But I also think it was. If we had to nail it down, it would be more in the camp of just not addressing the problematic things versus trying to, like, talk him up in a way that he's not, if that makes sense.
For sure.
Leaving it out more
definitely.
Than...
Definitely. Yeah. I think my big thing, I've been trying to, like, work it out in my head as we're talking about it, with Andy Warhol is he is the, like, pop culture icon.
Oh, totally.
He's
yeah.
such an icon, and I think with pop culture icons, even though, you know, he started as a pop culture icon in the 60s and 70s, we're very quick to just accept them as icons.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of that, especially with like younger audiences and thinking about my Andy Warhol day planner and stuff. Like, I think it's really easy to just be like, oh, this guy was cool in the 60s and he's did in the soup cans and
it's, and the 60s are cool.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, if he was cool then and he's so cool now.
Exactly. So yeah. I think it's really easy to just take in Andy Warhol and just like adopt him as like as important or valuable without really like, and once again, I'm speaking from personal experience without really fully taking the time to understand him or his work, you know? Yeah. And it's like, and if at the end of the day, after you like take the time to really like spend time with his work and you still love it, more power to you, you know?
Yeah. But, well, and that's the paradox of Andy Warhol too, is that his work is visually easily digestible. So people gravitate toward it, and they're told that they should like it. His pancake is playing possum right now.
He's a sleepy boy.
No. He sleeps like a little crescent moon.
He does. Totally. That's so funny.
He's so cute. We just disturbed him. He's like, guys.
But I did actually want to, before I move on, I wrote this down in my notes. I wanted to ask you guys, because they talked about the accessibility of pop art, which I think is an interesting concept. Mm-hmm. How accessible do you guys find pop art?
Oh, accessible how? Like,
just in general, like as an art form, like do you think it is a more accessible art form, or when you just hear that phrase, accessibility?
Yeah.
My gut says yeah.
I think that especially compared maybe to more to art movements prior to pop art, like pop art was so reproducible and just the scale that it was made on and the materials that it was made from were kind of in a lot of ways more cost effective, and they were, I think, just had higher visibility.
Yeah, the reproducibility of it.
Yeah, definitely.
So in that way, I think they're very accessible. However,
like, what about conceptually, though?
I know.
Because I agree. Exactly, yeah. Like, there's something very accessible about them, but I also think part of their appeal and their allure, like, going, like, if you're thinking Andy Warhol, like, the soup cans, like, a soup can, just a picture of a soup can, isn't particularly interesting on its own unless you're willing to attach some conceptual meaning to it.
Right.
And that idea isn't super accessible.
But you don't have to go that far is why I think it is accessible.
And that is
because
part
that
of
is
its appeal.
Is that you recognize it, and so you technically don't need to do more than that, which is,
that's,
I think,
true,
how most people approach Andy Warhol. You don't really need to know much more than what a Campbell's soup can is and who Andy Warhol is, and you feel like you're in the know.
That's true.
Compared to someone like Duchamp, who, you know, he's not trying to make people feel stupid, and I think Abby Jacobson does a great job of explaining how really he's making fun of the art world, and really he's laughing with the viewer, but you have to understand that, and if you don't, then you feel like he's making fun of you, and he's, you know,
definitely
being elitist, and so it's pretty horribly ironic, honestly, when you compare the two.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, it's weird because you're totally right. I definitely agree. I think where I get kind of like lost in it is maybe it's just more of a personal trait, is that my approach to art is and always has been looking for deeper meaning. And I think before going back to me as, you know, like younger me, who was a little bit more apt to just accept Andy Warhol, I think I maybe operated in this belief system that there was always something deeper going on with his work. You know what I mean? And so to me, that means if you just like accept that straight off, then to me it creates like a conceptualism similar to Duchamp. You know what I mean? But I don't know if I created that for myself or if it actually exists. You
Who knows? Honestly, I bet people could debate about it. I bet they have and they will. Like,
yeah,
that's,
right? I don't know. Just kind of, it's something. It's just a thing. What else do we have to talk about?
The emojis episode.
The emojis
episode.
Which is,
that's our
is
return
great.
Of Questlove.
Oh.
Questlove and Paola Antonelli.
Oh, she was the coolest. All the curators that she talked to on this podcast were great.
They seemed so
but
lovely.
But Paola was just a bundle of Italian jewelry.
I loved her so
and
much. I
had
loved
such
her.
A cool approach in talking about, like, putting the original emojis in the exhibit and things like putting video games in fine art museums, which is fucking dope.
Yeah.
Keep doing it, Paola. Like, and the fact that they were talking about that, and I think Questlove made the point of being like, okay, was it controversial? And it's like, yes. And that in and of itself is so much of the point.
I know.
Yeah. So much of the
point. I think.
Did it spark debate? If the
it
answer
creates
is yes,
discussion, debate.
It's art.
Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
So that was, repeat that, because there, Questlove has an amazing quote
yeah.
in this episode.
He basically says what Jenny said about.
I totally paraphrase it.
No, but
oh.
you were right, because whatever you
yeah.
use, I think, is what he said first. Does it.
He just said, like, did it create controversy?
Yeah, did it create controversy?
Yeah.
Does it spark debate?
Yeah.
Like, is if
yes.
it's doing that. Then yes, it's art, and he says it so succinctly. Like, he really just, he asks the question, he says, if the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I think I wrote it down, actually.
Oh, nice.
The exact quote, if I had to ask, is this allowed, then
mm-hmm.
it's high art.
Yeah.
And that was the quote by Questlove.
And he was talking about music and stuff, yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Specifically.
Yeah.
Totally. He was talking about albums and stuff he's
yeah,
listening to.
Yeah, yeah,
and that's his definition of high art, is if he has to ask himself if something's allowed, then that makes it art. And I love everything about that.
Yeah.
And I love everything about Questlove. Come on our
so
show.
Wise. Oh, my God.
I love him so much.
So cool.
He's so
yeah.
cool.
So
that
down
episode
to earth and
was,
wise all at once.
Was one of my favorites,
yeah.
for sure, because of him and because of that curator.
Paola.
And just...
She was so excited about, like, video games and
yeah.
code and stuff,
and
I was like, yes.
And that should be in museums.
Right?
The people who make those graphics are artists, and we've talked 100%. About this kind of loosely before, that, like, art can fill into so many different categories other than just, you know, painting, sculpture, printmaking, drawing.
Yeah.
Like, it is so much bigger than that, especially the further along we get in terms of what we're capable of doing with coding and algorithms and like graphic design and all of that, and there's I just see no reason why it shouldn't be
yeah
in a museum.
And also, like, I've kind of talked about this before, and the thing with emojis is I read this article a long time ago, well, like a year ago maybe, and it was basically talking about how in terms of the evolution of our language is like we started with symbols and then
mm-hmm.
yeah.
and then they turned into letters and then turned into language, and now we're reverting back to very similar symbols.
Yes.
Like, they are pictorial symbols
yeah.
that mean things, and it's taking on a life of its own where a combination of three emojis can mean something all its
yeah.
own. It's becoming its own language. And if you don't think that is some kind of beautiful human art form, like, I'm sorry, but
yeah.
you're missing the point.
Exactly.
Like, and I loved Abby's take on it, where she was like, her biggest issue with emojis is that they weren't, like, specific enough to how she wanted them to look. Like, and that's so perfect. As an illustrator, she's basically
yeah, right.
just like,
right.
you know, I understand visual language to the point that, like, emojis make me mad because they're not what I want them to be. And,
yeah.
like, that's perfect. And I like that they talked about the trajectory of emojis being customizable. And,
right,
like,
yeah.
Exactly.
Personal. Oh, they talk about bitmojis too.
Yes.
And I
yeah.
loved that Questlove was super into bitmojis.
Yes.
That made me happy.
I know.
Because and they are super bitmojis are super important because they play with self-image. Because you
totally.
You design your own bitmoji
yeah.
and Questlove mentions how bitmojis are powerful because you not only see a person's representation, but you see what a person thinks of themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn.
Yeah.
Like, it's so true.
Yeah.
That's pretty powerful.
Totally.
You
it made
know?
Me feel a lot better about, like, the scary Black Mirror idea that eventually we're all just gonna, like, be avatars. Like, I was like, well, if Questlove is coming to peace with it.
Oh, man. Black Mirror
maybe.
Will do you in.
It really will.
Great show, though.
But in a good way. Question everything.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
But yeah, that episode was
fantastic. Questlove, will you just run for president? Can you, like, be our leader?
he's too wise.
He's just, I love him so much.
I know.
What else?
There's one last.
There was one other episode.
The writing on the wall.
Yeah.
Text art.
I love text.
Yeah,
me
so
too.
Me too. I mean, last summer when I was working at the De Young, the main exhibit was Ed Brucher, and
mm-hmm.
he's all about text art. Prints, paintings, just words. Sometimes they're just street names.
Nice.
Rancho Boulevard. But I love it.
Yeah.
No, so, Jenny Holzer has been one of my favorites for a very long time, and her stuff is pretty much purely text, mm-hmm. you know, in different scenarios and in different ways. Sometimes she's had exhibits where she's done, you know, illuminated text on buildings.
Yeah, I love Tracy Eamon.
Yeah, like, they're just, she also has a whole installation in the sculpture garden at the Walker in Minneapolis, where mm-hmm. there are these benches, and mm-hmm. it's just, like, her text art on top of them.
Yeah.
Like, these really interesting, beautiful, poetic phrases on, I think she's amazing, and I think text art is super amazing because to claim that words aren't visual is also stupid.
Yeah.
You know?
Typography, hello.
Yeah.
No, totally. And I mean, especially from our perspective, we write about visual material.
Yeah.
So there is such a natural and beautiful interplay between text and image.
Yep.
And then bringing that together in a totally visual way. It's just so cool. And the text enhances the image and the image enhances the text. And both of them can kind of interplay off of each other and create something, you know, that can be really emotional and evocative.
It is such a natural relationship. And
in this episode, and then also in an earlier episode, episode 7 as well, they talk, or Abby Jacobson talks to Martine Sims.
Yes.
Who, oh my God. She is amazing. She's so cool. And I, spent some time watching some of her work last night, and I'm going to go a lot deeper into it.
Dude.
She lives in LA. We should try and get her, on the show.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Can you imagine?
She's so cool. And her work is really interesting. And just friggin' dope. And and they're talking about in this episode, she's in the film episode as well, because a lot of her artwork is film based. And they talk about in the film episode, they also talk about Howardena Pindell, who we definitely need to spotlight quick.
Totally.
Who did Free White in 21, which
was
a very important,
definitely,
very important film piece. And it's chilling and it's kind of awful, but it's really awful, it's important and it's powerful and it's a really beautiful thing. And Martine Sims is inspired by Howardena Pindell's work, among many other artists.
But I like the way that she described how it took her so long to hear about her. Sim says that she wasn't really aware of her work for so long, and then had one of those moments, as many artists do, where they discover a work that they're like, whoa. I'm almost a direct descendant of this person without even knowing them, which is just
so cool,
which happens a lot in art, a crazy amount.
And there are also, with Howardena Pindell's Free White in 21, there are a lot of response works to it, just on YouTube and stuff. People who have done response versions of it. So definitely look into that. But Martine Sims, amazing contemporary artist out of LA. She's 29. She's our age, and she just does really provocative work, but she's also really cool and really chill.
Super down to earth.
She had the best vibe, and they were talking about text art, and brings up the idea that textual symbols can also be aesthetic. They're not just letters. They also have an aesthetic existence of their own.
For sure.
So with text art, sometimes it is about what the text is saying, but a lot of times it's about the visual expression of that text as well. And so, there's such an important interplay of how words work and how visual material
totally
works. And how words are visual material.
Yes, and, she has these, overarching questions for each episode, they come up at different points, but, they're thematic, so she does bring those up. And in this one, it's, can just words be art? And in my mind, I was hands down, no debate, 100%, just words can be art.
Yeah.
And that was probably the easiest question she asked.
But we're getting on an hour here. Is there any other moments from a piece of work we want to touch on real quick, or any closing thoughts we had? You need to go listen immediately. Yeah. Like, we barely, you know, got
overall,
into it.
Fantastic. Great guests, great artists, lots of really quality interviews with a wide range of different kinds of people that all kind of contributed to this educational but in like fun podcast.
Yeah, it was a good time.
It was good.
I was really, like, there were multiple times where I was, like, really jealous that I wasn't in that room. Like, really, the whole podcast. I was, like, really jealous I wasn't in that room. I just want to be there right now. Yeah, so many. Abby Jacobson got to have so many cool experiences just talking to these artists.
Oh,
and, like, she got a lot of behind-the-scenes material. And
It was cool to hear her tell her whole story, too, which we didn't really get into at the But she talks about her kind of relationship to art, which is a lifelong relationship. She talks about how it's kind of started in childhood. She comes from a family of artists, and it's just, I didn't know all of those details about her life. I knew that she was an illustrator. I didn't know she was a illustrator with a degree. Like, I didn't realize that she actually went to art school and, like, that was a point in her life. And
I also liked when she talked about how people assume that she is Abby from Broad City.
Yeah.
Because obviously her character from Broad City is based on her, but they're not the same person per se, you know?
Yeah.
And she kind of talked about how there's an interesting intersection there where people just assume that whatever happens on the show is representative of her real life.
But
you know?
She's always making herself so visible to society.
So vulnerable.
It's terrifying.
Well, and she's so humble about, or not even, humble's not the right word. I'm trying to, like, almost gracious about where she is.
Yeah, definitely.
I forget which guest it is, but someone basically, I think it's RuPaul, is like, well, people come up to you on the street, right? And maybe it's not RuPaul. I don't know. Someone is talking about how people must come up to her all the time in New York now and be like, Abby, oh my god,
Where's Alana? Yeah.
Yeah, and she, in response, she's kind of like, yeah, well, yeah, that is kind of how it is. But she's not, like, angry or, like, upset about it. She doesn't feel slighted. Like, you can tell she's kind of, like, aware of the way that she's opened herself up to people. And, I don't know, she's, like, patient with the fact that people think that they know her or, like, approach her like they do. And she doesn't get too worked up about it. It's almost like,
she understands. Makes me like her even more.
Yeah, she's forgiving of people for doing that. Like, she understands. And I thought that was cool. Because you don't have to, because that has to be super annoying.
Yeah, definitely.
But, can't even imagine.
Yeah, no, it's super great series. Super cool. I'm really glad they did it.
And yeah.
I'm glad we
all go listen to it.
Yeah, you should listen to it. And I'm glad we got to talk about it in response. And I think it's really cool. So head on over to iTunes and check that out. Let's do a couple quick listener mails.
Certainly.
All right, we have a message from Jacqueline, and the subject line is thank you. Hey babes, I just wanted to thank each of you for this podcast. I listen to y'all when I'm in my studio working, and it's so rad to be able to freshen up my art history with such knowledgeable and fun women. I'm also going back to school for both art history and sociology, so this has been an amazing asset.
Oh, fuck
cheers,
yeah.
Jacqueline. That's so cool.
That's really cool. Art history and sociology are a great combination, BT dub. Mm-hmm. Like, you can do a lot of really interesting things with that. Also, love that you consider us an asset. That, like, whenever people, I don't know, like, because this is so, I mean, obviously a ton of work goes into this, and like, we work really hard on our research, but it's also really fun. So when people use us as some kind of a resource, like, that's like the nicest thing ever. We really appreciate it.
Crazy cool.
We got another one from Tamara? Podcast.
Tamara.
Podcast imitates life. Ladies, I was out doing some errands today, accompanied by your podcast about your European travels. You got to the part about Charlemagne Palestine, and I thought, that sounds entertaining. So I popped the info into Google, and I found I was literally 2 minutes by foot from the exhibit. Did I mention I live in Paris? Well, I had a lovely visit and took a few pictures before heading out to finish shopping for the day. Thanks for the fun detour. I've enjoyed hearing your experience of my adopted city. I've made a point of visiting an inordinate number of museums, activities, restaurants, festivals, and other assorted quirky locations here, but it's nice to know that even after 6 years, I can still be pleasantly surprised. Sincerely, Tamara.
That's super cool.
That's really nice.
Yeah, I'm so glad. Like,
yeah, thanks for sharing that with us.
Yeah, because it was such a happy accident for us to come to stumble on it. So I'm glad you got to experience it as well. It's a super fun exhibit. If anyone else is listening and is in Paris, they should also check it out at the Jewish Museum.
Hopefully it's still up. I mean,
well, it was today.
Oh, sweet.
Eight hours ago.
Okay, well, then it's still up.
It's still up. Go check it out at the Jewish Museum. Let's see, those are short ones, so let's throw one more in real quick, because we have so much listener mail.
You guys are the best.
Okay, let's do this one. Do you want to read this one, Jenny?
Yeah. I can read that. I don't have my glasses, but I can do it. This is from Gabrielle. Hello. Oh, subject, Hieronymus Bosch. Oh, I bet I know what this is going to be about. Okay, hello.
Hieronymus Bosch, maybe?
Yeah, probably. Hello, I love you guys. Heaps. You're so cool. I listen to your podcast with a glass of wine while I make dinner, and it's absolutely fabulous. I'm not sure if you'll even read this. Girl, we are. But I just want you to know that I love you and you're amazing. I'm pretty sure I've emailed before to say the same thing, but I don't care. Girl, we love it all. Also, I've called you girl a couple times. Hope
that's girl!
Okay. I do have one request. Hieronymus Bosch is one of my favorite artists, and I was wondering if you haven't done one already, if you guys could do an episode on him. That would be awesome. Peace out. Okay, peace out. Gabby. Thank you, Gabby. And that is a great recommendation, and we also love Hieronymus Bosch, and that can certainly be one on the docs.
Yeah, I feel like we talk about him all the time. He's definitely a favorite of every one of us. I have a future tattoo planned inspired by Hieronymus Bosch. Also, he's our Facebook account name.
Yeah. Is Hieronymus Bosch. We're going to disclose that. I almost said it, and then I was like, is that a secret?
Yeah. No, it's fine. If you want to Facebook friend us, find us, Hieronymus Bosch, that's us. Yeah, we love him. He's such a fucking weirdo. I love him so much.
It's fantastic.
So he is definitely added to the list. Maybe we'll push him up a little bit. Yeah, if you guys have requests, whether they're on our list or not, like, send them to us, because when people send us requests, we kind of push them up in importance because we know you guys want to hear them. But thank you for that super sweet message, and you can email us as often as you want. Like, it just brightens our day, and we really appreciate it. So thank you all so much for listening to this response episode. You got to go check out a piece of work. If you have questions, comments, anything, email us at arthistorybabes@gmail.com. You can head over to our Patreon, patreon.com/arthistorybabes. Just a quick thing, we're going to start doing little bonus episodes for all of our lovely patrons on Patreon. So if you donate, you will have access to monthly mini episodes from us that no one else will have access to. So
VIP,
exactly. And some behind the scenes bonus footage as well. So if that interests you, go to patreon.com/arthistorybabes. Donate whatever you can. We sincerely appreciate it.
We're not asking for big bucks necessarily.
No, you will have access with any donation, no matter the price. Yeah. So anything is welcome and appreciated. Write us a review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. We love them. Check us out on all the social medias. We're there. And thanks for listening.
Thank you all.
Bye.
Bye.
From Cabernet to Monet, they're here to slay the art history babes.
We were quoting
so much in Europe.
In Europe, what was the
one fook?
Oh no, it was the one. I can't pay.
Oh yeah. I'm a baby. Yeah.